Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents I'm Sorry, Love, Your Husband. Honest, hilarious stories from a father of three who made all the mistakes and made up for them. By Clint Edwards. Narrated by Joe Hempel.
Marriage. Marriage is what brings us together today. Marriage, that blessed arrangement, that dream within a dream.
The Princess Bride. Don't you think you're overreacting? Okay, I lied to you. This isn't a chapter. It's actually the preface to the book. Perhaps I shouldn't start a book with a lie, so I'm sorry. I apologize. Please forgive me. I'll never do it again. But here's the thing. Preface is such a boring title, and I don't think anyone reads the preface of any book. But that doesn't mean this preface. My preface isn't important, because it is. So I lied. Just a small one. An insignificant, no big deal, you can still love me lie. If I told you that I had a three-headed dog, you'd realize that I didn't as soon as you got into the circus tent. But hey, stay and look around because you are about to meet the biggest circus in the history of ever. My family. Okay, wait. Perhaps I am exaggerating, which isn't a lie. Exactly. It's a bending of the truth. My family is actually pretty normal. I think. I hope. Mel and I have been married since 2004. We have three kids. Tristan, the know-it-all. Nora, the snarky princess, and Aspen, the worst roommate ever. All of them are amazing and frustrating and completely overwhelming. I don't really know what I'm doing as a father and husband, so I apologize a lot. But honestly, does anyone know what they're doing? I doubt it. And don't look online for answers. No family's house is as clean as their Facebook pictures show. They just move the laundry pile to another chair. Out of view, along with the Play-Doh and Pokemon cards. And no one's children are all that respectful, regardless of how perfect their parenting is. Sometimes the children are sweet, but sometimes they're jerks too, just like everyone else. And there is, in fact, no official parenting manual because raising a family is actually a million gears turning in a million different directions, all of them covered in sour milk. So yeah, sometimes it feels like I'm running a circus. In fact, as I'm writing this preface, Aspen is sucking milk from her sippy cup and spitting it at the TV. It's her new thing. We're working through it. Okay, I lied again. I'm sorry. She's actually at daycare, probably spitting milk at their TV. Are you mad I lied again? Now come on, don't you think you're overreacting? Sorry. Scratch that. Family. Marriage, all of it, has caused me to make some mistakes. A lot of them, actually. I've said a lot of things I shouldn't have said, like, don't you think you're overreacting? Sorry again about that. I felt guilty over everything from getting flaming pissed because my son farted on me, to letting him blow all of his birthday money, to my messy house, to missing all the naps. But ultimately, much of parenting and marriage is about mistakes and apologies and feeling inadequate. I'm sorry, but it's true. It's about recognizing when you're wrong, saying you're sorry, learning from your mistakes, and hoping and praying that you didn't just screw up your child for life or lose your spouse. And when I think about all this, I realize that perhaps it was best for me to start this book with a mistake and an apology. It makes sense, doesn't it? Although, I will say it, moms are rock stars. Mel is the most amazing woman I know. She's smart and driven and, most importantly, she calls me on my crap in ways that infuriate me in the moment but help me realize that she loves me enough to try to make me a better husband and father. What could be more loving than that? Perhaps I should have titled this book, Listen to Your Wife. No, I like my first title. Going into marriage, I didn't see our arguments as a show of love. It took me years to see it that way. Even now, I struggle to see my own shortcomings. But that's being human, right? So I'm going to talk Mel up because she's the most wonderful thing in my life, hands down. I hope you don't mind. Mel has made mistakes too, though, no doubt about it. But those are her stories, and these are mine. Someday she might write a book titled I'm Sorry, Love Your Wife. But right now, these are my apologies. These are my mistakes, so buckle up. If you're a wife and mother reading this, I know you will see a lot of similarities between your husband, my dumbassery, and Mel's frustrations. And if you are a father and husband reading this, hopefully you can learn from my mistakes and better understand that although marriage and family is life-changing in the most frustrating ways, it is all completely worth it. And if you are a child reading this, I hope you asked your parents' permission, because it might freak you out and cause you to never get married and or have children. This book is a real and honest look at the fact that raising your little turds is the most difficult thing in the history of ever. But that doesn't make it bad. It makes parenting worth it. And if you are a fan of No Idea What I'm Doing, a daddy blog, my site, or if you are one of the bazillion people who follow me on social media and have been grooving to the articles I've written for Scary Mommy, The Washington Post, Babbel, and the many other places I've contributed to over the years, you might see a few things you recognize. Some of these chapters were inspired by work I did elsewhere, and I decided to expand them here. It was one of the most exciting parts about writing this book. Online, I'm usually left cramming my ideas into 1,000 words or less. But with a book, that rule goes out the window. It's been awesome to expand, mix, and weave some of those essays that hit home online, but I felt needed much, much more. There's a lot of new stuff, too, so don't worry. You are going to love it. If you're new to my writing and to the Edwards family, don't you worry at all. You are about to feel a lot better about your marriage and your parenting, because, trust me, I don't know what the hell I'm doing either. Clint Edwards. Marriage. The nosy neighbor and our messy house. I was building shelves in the garage when our neighbor girl, one of my 4-year-old daughter's nosy friends, approached me and said, "I just saw in your house. It's pretty dirty. Nora's mommy needs to clean more." She was a curly-haired, blonde-headed little 5-year-old in jeans and a brightly colored T-shirt who often ventured from her yard into ours. When I say often, I mean several times a day. We lived in a small neighborhood in rural Oregon, population 1,600. Kids didn't wander neighborhoods like they did when I was a kid back in the 80s, when we went from house to house, sometimes miles from home, looking for someone to play with. But they definitely ventured a house or two over. The house next to us was a rental, and that's where this girl was living. She was one of two families who'd ended up living next to us over the past couple of years, and this wasn't the first time she'd peeked in our windows. She had a nasty habit of doing that, regardless of the day and time. It was a common occurrence for me to look up from my meal, my family seated at the dinner table, and see this young lady gazing at me from the window next to the dining room. It's funny, really. Crap like this seemed charming in shows like Leave It to Beaver, but in real life it's incredibly irritating to have some little kid peeking in on your every moment, asking if your daughter can play and making snide comments about your home. I did have empathy for her, however. Her mother was single, and she worked a full-time job. In a lot of ways, her situation reminded me of the one I grew up in, and I think that's the main reason I never approached this girl's parent. As irritating as she was, I didn't want to add more stress to a single mother. Ironically, just the day before this little girl commented on the state of our house, Mel and I had discussed putting curtains in our front windows to keep her from peeking inside. We hadn't gotten around to it, however, so now this nosy little neighbor was placing my wife on trial for keeping a messy house. She had a hand on her hip, eyes open wide, waiting for a response. "Some people find comments like that rude," I said. She looked at me with a snarky smile and said, "Yup." The suckiest part about what 5-year-olds say is that they are 100% honest. And, indeed, our house was a mess. At the time, I could have probably listed a million reasons why we had clutter piles, random installments of underwear, laundry baskets full of clean laundry sitting precariously in the middle of the living room, cracker crumbs spackled about the carpet, and so on. There always seemed to be a bracelet loom, a couple of dolls, a Play-Doh kit, and a few dirty dishes on the table. The sink was often full of dishes, and our garage was a wreck of boxes. The reason I was building shelves was to try to add some order to the chaos. Because of the rental houses next door and the one across the street, the number of children in our neighborhood waxed and waned. At this particular time, we were at an all-time neighbor kids high. The rental across the street had a family with 5 or 6 kids. I honestly don't know how many children really lived there. Perhaps they were cousins or stepkids. They all had the same brown hair and eyes. I'm not the kind of person to get to know my neighbors, so I simply assumed they all came from the brown-haired, brown-eyed adults who lived in the home. For all I know, though, they could have been running an orphanage. I couldn't keep track of all the children entering and exiting that house. The nosy little girl's family next door had another 5 kids. For the past several months, we always had random kids hanging out in our living room, on the porch, or in my children's rooms, eating our food and making messes by getting out our toys and not putting them back. My 2 older children, Tristan and Nora, loved it. Mel and I didn't. We'd also just had a new baby, Aspen, which was easily the biggest and best reason for our messy house. Few things are as disruptive as a new baby, and considering Mel and I were struggling to handle the transition from 2 kids to 3, which truthfully felt like I was juggling chainsaws and someone asked me to hold a baby, our house was exceptionally bad. Not that we had piles of garbage or anything particularly nasty like that. It was kid clutter and some dirty dishes. It's the stuff that people crop out of the background when posting pictures of their family on Facebook, or shove into another room when inviting company. But this nosy little girl, peeking in our windows, got the full reality of our mess, and she was more than happy to tell my wife, who was currently recovering from a cesarean, that she needed to get her act together. At least in her case, I can give her the benefit of the doubt. She was 5 years old. She didn't really understand the realities of parenting and family. I hadn't taken the time to peek in her windows, so I didn't know the state of her house, but I had to assume that it wasn't much better than ours. I mean, honestly, if she and her siblings were half as inconsiderate and messy at their own home as they were in our home, their house had to look like a garbage truck crashed into a rummage sale. Her older brother didn't even knock anymore. This 10-year-old, dark-haired sports enthusiast who predominantly wore bright-colored, off-brand sports clothing with captions like, "Football is life," and "Pass me the ball," once walked into my house, poured himself a glass of milk, drank half of it, left the jug along with the half-empty glass on the counter, and then walked out. I was sitting on the sofa folding laundry as he did it. I assumed he was there to play with my 8-year-old son, Tristan, but he wasn't. He just wanted some milk. What a dick move. I mean, seriously, were we an open kitchen? The least he could have done was put the milk away. Wait, the least he could have done was knock and ask for something to drink. Wait. The least he could have done was put up the toilet seat when he peed at my house. I suppose that's a different story altogether. The whole milk situation made me feel walked on, and to top it all off, his sister felt that we had a messy house. I know that some kids are better or worse behaved when at other people's homes, but what Mel and I later referred to as Milkgate 2014 went down in the history books of jackass neighbor kid moves. Sometimes I daydreamed of walking into the home next door and pulling the same milk-drinking action, or perhaps just looking in their windows and making snide comments, or maybe peeing on their toilet seat. But the problem is, I'm an adult now, so I have to take these sort of things with a grain of salt. I have to be understanding and grown up about it all, even in moments when I really, really don't want to. And yet, with all the factors coming at us, new baby, young children, crappy neighbor kids, I still felt ashamed of our messy house. I think that's the really frustrating part about clean house judgment. I think most families aren't all that much better at keeping their house tidy than Mel and I are. They're simply better at hiding it. They are more diligent about tucking things in back rooms and cleaning the visible spots. And perhaps that's what I'd find by looking in my neighbor's windows, a clean living room, while the rest of the house looked as bad or even worse than my own. I don't know if it's part of a parent's genetics to try to give excuses for a messy house, or if it's something we all learn growing up. All parents, since the history of ever, have felt the shame of judgment when a visitor, regardless of his or her age, has given their messy house that snide, twisted-lipped look that seems to say, "I just saw in your house. It's pretty dirty." And while my house was messy on the day of the little girl's comment, there are people with messier houses. I've seen them. And when I was young, I'd go to these houses and say rotten things like, "I just saw in your house. It's pretty dirty." Same as that little girl. And I think that is part of what drove me so crazy about her. I saw so much of my childhood in her judgmental, snarky little butt face. I felt confident that she ran home each evening after peeking in my windows and told her mother all about our mess, half of which she and her siblings assisted with. Then she and her mother would laugh and laugh and judge their messy house neighbors. Then her mother might say something like, "If she really loved her family, she'd clean the house more." My mother used to say crap like that. Obviously, it scarred me for life. But I think it scarred mothers most of all, because the thing is, it always comes down to blaming the mother. I think that is one of the things that bothered me the most about what that little girl said in my garage. She blamed Mel for our messy house, like I used to. I'm not happy about it. I'll tell you that right now. Shortly after Mel became a stay-at-home mom, I started getting really judgmental. This was about 5 years earlier when Mel and I moved to Minnesota for me to attend graduate school. We had two kids then, and with my graduate stipend, scholarships, student loans, and the lower cost of living in the Midwest, combined with all the time demands of graduate school, it made sense for Mel to quit her job at the Home Depot and stay home with the kids. We were both 26 at the time, and had been married for about 4 years. Mel staying home with the kids was something she'd longed for during the majority of our marriage. And while I was happy to have her home with the kids, I started looking at the state of the house and thinking, you have one job. One job to take care of the home. We lived in a 3-bedroom townhouse. It was just over 1,000 square feet, and it was the largest house we'd ever lived in. When I came home from school or work, I often made snide comments about the dishes or the toys or the crackers on the carpet. I sounded a lot like the nosy girl next door. I never really confronted her head on. It was always something said under my breath, a childish bite at her performance as a mother. At the time, it was my way of dropping a not-so-subtle hint without taking the issue head on. When I think back on these comments, however, I realize I was completely spineless and insensitive. I often took the snide comment route early in our marriage. I think a lot of men do, hopeful that by making snide remarks we can incite change. However, it doesn't really work that way. What actually happened is it made Mel feel insecure, and it made me look like a judgmental prick. Take notes, new fathers. Part of the problem with this transition of Mel staying home with the kids was a lack of understanding. Although I'd been a father for almost 3 years and felt like I had it down, I was, without a doubt, a rookie. Case in point, I didn't understand what it meant to take care of children full-time. I'd never experienced it. Our oldest was about to turn 3, and while I'd been an active parent, between college and work, I was always a part-time father. And Mel? She was a rookie, too. She'd always been a full-time employee and a part-time mother. Our son had been raised in part by Mel, me, and my mother-in-law. But with our move to Minnesota, that all changed. We had no family. It was just us, and now Mel was a full-time mom, and I was a full-time student and breadwinner. And that all added up to me leaning on the assumption that Mel should be some June Cleaver of a housekeeper and mother, as if that were an actual, realistic goal. I never considered that my kids don't care if we recently dusted or swept or vacuumed. They'll drop Cheerios anyway. When I was a stay-at-home dad a few years later, I'd sweep beneath the table, and 10 minutes later it would be dirty again. I'd have the kids put their toys away before going to bed, and by morning, before I even got up, they were back out. I don't want to speak for all kids, but my kids are remarkable messmakers. About 6 months into Mel being a stay-at-home mom, she finally had enough of my snide comments, and we got into an argument about the house. I told her it was embarrassing. I asked her what she did all day. "It really can't be that hard to keep the house clean," I said. We got into a huge fight. Mel told me that I needed to realize what she was up against. And then she told me something that really hit home. She said, "Sometimes it comes down to cleaning the house or taking Tristan and Noah to the park, spending time having fun with them, or teaching them to read or write. Sometimes I can either do the dishes or teach our son how to ride a bike or our daughter how to walk. I'd rather do those things, frankly. I'd rather not be that mom who ignores our kids and myself because I'm so busy worrying about what the neighbors might think of our messy house." It was then that I stopped looking at the dirty dishes and assuming that they were evidence of Mel sitting around all day. Instead, I got up myself and started washing the dishes. I realized that this was not her mess, but our mess, and I started pitching in more. I stopped worrying about the house and started paying attention to the development of our children. I started to pay attention to how happy they were and the kind of relationship they shared with their mother. And I noticed that we had a messy house and really happy, bright kids. That's what really matters. The weekend after our nosy neighbor commented on the state of my house, I was hanging curtains in our front windows as she peeked in and asked what I was doing. It was a warm day in Oregon, so the windows were open. Her blonde curls were in pigtails, making her appear innocent enough, but behind her eyes and dimpled smile, I could see it coming. Some crappy, dickhead comment that she couldn't keep to herself. "Looks like your house is still messy," she said. Then she tilted her head down and to the side, her lips twisted, eyes looking up as though she'd told me some undeniable truth. If Nora's mom really loved her, she'd clean the house more. I took a breath. I wanted to take a drink. I stopped what I was doing and stepped outside. I walked past the nosy neighbor girl. In front of our house were two cement steps at the end of our patio. I sat down and then patted the seat next to me. She took a seat. She was in pink shorts that rested just above the knee. Her shins were bruised from playing outside, and her shoes were pink and covered in pictures of Disney princesses that matched her off-white Frozen t-shirt. She looked up at me with a curious, dimpled grin. And I'll admit, part of me wanted to smack this kid. I mean, I wouldn't. I never would. But I was flaming pissed. But here's where things get complicated with little kids, even the ones that aren't yours. Her face was soft and sweet and innocent. She was a cute kid, no doubt about it. And I can say with 100% conviction that God made children cute because of situations like this. It's the only way they could possibly survive into adulthood. "Let me tell you something," I said. Then I paused for a moment, trying to figure out what I was going to say to this little girl so that she would understand. "The mess isn't Nora's mommy's mess. It's our family's mess. Nora's mommy doesn't own that mess. In fact, sometimes it's your mess because you are over here so often." She continued to give me a blank, grinning stare. "And even if it was Nora's mommy's mess, Nora's mom spends a lot of time making sure that Nora is happy. She spends a lot of time making sure that Nora and her brother are learning new things and growing up to be the best Nora and Tristan they can be. She also just had a baby, which isn't easy at all. And you know what?" "What?" she said. "I think all of that is more important than a clean house. So if our house is messy, it's because we are spending that time with our children. And that's not a bad thing. It's actually a really good thing. Does that make sense?" She thought about what I had said for a moment, her blue eyes moving side to side in her little skull. Something seemed to be clicking. She looked up at me with bright eyes and a wholesome, crooked-toothed smile and said, "Nope." Then she walked across our driveway, down the sidewalk, and into her own house. I put my face in my hands for a moment, elbows resting on my knees. Then I stood and turned around. In the window, holding our new daughter, was Mel with the half-grin that wives make only when they realize their husband finally understands. Dad can stay home with sick kids too, you know. I worked longer shifts at my university job during the week so I could take Fridays off and be at home alone and write. I was working on this book, actually. Only it wasn't working out like I'd planned. Each Friday before Mel headed to her new teaching gig at our kids' charter school, she'd hand me a list of honeydews. Or a kid would come down with a cold and I'd be home trying to write while cooking chicken noodle soup and listening to Tristan or Nora moan as if they were dying. "Can you get me some water? I'm too sick to get up." Moments later, I'd hear them let out a long, healthy laugh at something funny on the iPad. They were milking it to stay home from school longer. I'm not an idiot. I did the same thing as a kid. We all did. 4 Fridays into my new Fridays off writing arrangement, Nora didn't want to go to the school aftercare and asked me to pick her up in the early afternoon. I had a looming deadline, and when I told Nora, "No, I've got work to do," her eyes got all misty beneath her brown bangs. Her short, slender frame was in a red school polo with a blue skirt and leggings with kittens on them. She was even missing her 2 front teeth. She was 7, and everything about her played on my fatherly empathy. Then she said, "If you really loved me, you'd come pick me up." Leave it to my daughter to come up with some dramatic one-liner that made me feel like a complete dickhead. This really was her specialty. She ran into her room and slammed the door. I was wrangling Aspen, our toddler, into clothing during my conversation with Noah, which is always a little stressful. Dressing Aspen was a lot like wrestling a squirmy alligator into pants, biting and all. Mel heard all of this from the bathroom, and she came down the hall in black slacks and a gray cardigan, half her hair straightened, the other half still mashed from sleep, and said, "Really, Clint? You can't take a 15-minute break to pick up your daughter?" My bags were packed. I was on a guilt trip. Normally, Mel doesn't come at me like this, but she was obviously still a little pissed from the night before. We'd argued because Nora's ears started hurting after dinner. The kid was prone to ear infections, and we weren't sure if she was going to need to stay home during the day. The argument wasn't over the ear, though. It was over who was going to miss work if Nora stayed home. I had assumed Mel would stay home, but I suppose I always assumed that, which really was the backbone of the problem. We were in the bedroom during our argument. "Why does it always fall on me?" she said. "Every time a kid is sick, I'm the one home with them. I'm the one missing work. I mean, honestly, have you ever, even once, stayed home from work with a sick kid?" I was positive, 100% sure that I had. Hadn't I? I thought and thought as Mel glared and glared. She waited for an answer while I searched for one. I gave her a couple of half starts. "What about..." There was the one day... I stayed home from class once, didn't I? Then I finally conceded. "I can't remember a specific time, but I'm pretty sure I have." I said it with a stern confidence, emphasizing specific and time to give my argument weight. I assumed my certainty would make up for my sparse and ultimately pathetic answer and cause Mel to drop the argument. It didn't work. I'm as surprised as you are. Thinking back, though, I probably sounded like the last time my son insisted he flushed the toilet, but the evidence told a different story. She didn't say anything. Instead, she gave me the mom look, a piercing, never-wavering stare that all moms have. My mother had this look, and so did my grandmother. When I got married, I'd assumed I'd escape it. But I was wrong. I looked at the carpet. Mel stepped into the bathroom. Part of the problem was that Mel working was a new thing for us. We'd gone through several arrangements over the years. When we first had Tristan, we both worked while I went to school. But once I went to grad school, Mel became a stay-at-home mom. Then once I was done with school, Mel went back to finish her degree. Suddenly, she was a stay-at-home mom and student while I started my big kid after-college job at the university. With each transition, the game changed when it came to childcare. And I will be the first to admit that each change had never gone smoothly. Thinking about all this, it seemed like we should have gotten better at these transitions. But we hadn't. In some ways, we've gotten suckier. So now, with Mel...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?